This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
What would you do if your home, your village, your people, your right to exist were under threat? Take action, speak out, resist or retreat? Today's guest is Palestinian-born activist and justice seeker Rena Tamimi, who is here to shed some light on what it is like living and breathing this unfathomable scenario for real. Welcome to Tell Me Moya, where the chats are candid, the laughs are loud, and nothing is off limits. I'm Harriet Moya, and each episode I'm sitting down with brilliant women, or people who identify as women, for no filter and no nonsense chats about, well, pretty much anything. Real, relatable, and at times raucous, Tell Me Moya dives right into the conversations we want to have but don't have time for, and the ones we don't want to have but we know we should. Strap in. Are you ready for Tell Me Moya? The first season of Tell Me Moya is quite simply conversations with eight interesting women that I know. And no one fits the bill better than my very special guest today, Renard Tamimi. Now, Renard is a prominent Palestinian New Zealander activist and broadcaster based in Otipoti, Dunedin, who is known for her community leadership and media presence and her unwavering and passionate advocacy and activism, not only for the liberation of Palestine, but human rights and humanitarian efforts everywhere. So welcome, Rena. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This is very special.
It's lovely. We've only sort of met briefly a few times, but I just know that you're somebody incredibly special who I admire so much. So
thank you.
I appreciate you giving your time to be here. And I want to begin by just expressing how sorry I am for what has been unfolding for your people, your homeland for the last few years, but obviously decades previously as well. And just express my sorrow for how humanity seems to have failed your people and the lack of action, the lack of, I mean, even though we do see action everywhere, it's just like the lack of that being enough. And I just really wanted to express that to you straight off the bat.
Thank you.
My heart is so with you. And I'll never forget turning up to my first march for Palestine here in Dunedin at the museum well over 2 years ago now, which in and of itself is just like so miserable. And seeing and hearing this incredibly strong and brave and powerful woman who also seemed so like soft and nurturing and heartbroken, leading the march and the speeches and just being filled with this, I was just filled with this immense awe for what you were carrying and doing so fiercely. And you've been an integral player in the Dunedin Justice for Palestine group, speaking at these rallies, leading the marches. And I'm really interested to know, were these marches the first bit of activism you've ever been involved with, or do you have a history of activism?
Thank you. Thank you so much for that intro. And it really fills my heart up when I know that even if it was just you caring or you noticing the work we've been doing, it just really fills my heart and it warms my heart at a time where we think humanity has failed us. But it's those people like yourself and the ones that show up are what makes a difference and what actually they make us, they give us some energy to keep going where we lack of energy. Going back to your question, no, it was not the first bit of activism, I guess. It started back years ago. I can't remember when now, probably my time during university here. But the one that sticks out to me the most was when Ahed Tamimi was, she's an activist from Palestine.
Yes.
We're not related at all, by the way.
Just
same last name. But she was arrested at the time and there was a rally that was, I think, organised by the Otago Socialist Movement or the university. I don't want to pick out names right now, so I don't remember who it was organised by, but I remember Brandon Johnstone and Andrew Tate being, I guess, prominent figures at the time and me meeting them for the first time. So anyway, we had our first rally then and actually I should have started answering their questions by saying I did once or twice or three times go out and rally in Palestine while I was there. I wouldn't really call it a rally, as you would end up getting tear gassed and things. But yeah, it sort of started from home. But then when I came here, I would just take every opportunity to, you know, speak out for my people, basically.
Yes, of course. So that brings me to talk about your background a wee bit. So for the listeners who aren't Dunedin-based, so you were born on the West Bank in a city called Hebron in Palestine, right? And your family moved to Dunedin in 2008. So in order to kind of get to know the woman a wee bit behind the megaphone, can you tell me more or tell us about some of the details about your childhood and your background, what it was like growing up in Palestine? And it was such a broad question, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean, so I was born in 1995 in Palestine, in Hebron. I grew up around the most loving family, the most loving grandparents, the most loving cousins and surroundings you could ever be surrounded by.
Beautiful.
But of course, since childhood and up until today, I still have the memories of checkpoints. I still have the memories of hearing rockets, fire, everything occupation related I have seen and lived, probably not as close as someone to, let's say, from Gaza recently or someone living in the West Bank right now. But being having visited home just this last year, it has definitely brought back memories for me and brought up more childhood memories and photos and things. But so we grew up there, moved here. As mum got a PhD scholarship from Otago University, and then I started high school. I went to Otago Girls High School here, and then towards the end of high school, I won the AMP People's Choice Award.
Amazing.
Which not many people talk about. It's not really online that much because I actually did face some racism back then.
Wow.
And the AMP people did end up deleting some footage of things to, I guess, to keep me safe, but also keep them safe at the time as well. But the good thing out of that was $10,000 that went towards my university career.
Incredible.
Student loan is not as high because of that scholarship, which
amazing.
Is good.
And unlike then, some of us.
I'm still paying it off, don't worry. And I, studied information science and marketing and then started doing various jobs and now I'm married, got a child and
So is it just you or have you got siblings?
I do have siblings. So I am the eldest. There's Nasser. He is 27. He's in Melbourne working. And we've got Malak who is 15. She goes to Queens High School. So, yeah, I am the eldest and then we've got a girl and a boy.
Yeah, right. And so that is a really interesting, you described your childhood in terms of all the love and tremendous probably happiness, I would assume, but then this kind of contradicting fear or how did your parents kind of navigate that in terms of reassuring you or being realistic or what were the, you know, how were those things explained to you?
Yeah, I guess I left Palestine when I was 13. So I guess I do have very vague memories of everything, but you just get on with it.
It's
you
just life.
Get
it's
used
normal.
To it. Exactly. Yeah. It's just normal. You go and you know, your door gets knocked by the IDF late at night because they're looking for someone and you suddenly up in the morning, mum is having to help us, you know, calm down and things, but yet they're storming around the houses looking for whoever they were looking for and you just get used to it.
Wow.
You just get used to it, which shouldn't be the case because no one should ever have to be used to this type of violence and, you know,
and
occupation.
Invasion. But, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, especially when, you know, home is meant to be home and
safe.
It's meant to be safe, your safe space. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really, I think New Zealanders, we have absolutely no ability to kind of conceive of what that must be like. So we are incredibly, I don't want to use the word lucky, but yep. naive, I think. Naive.
Like, yeah. But no, my parents have always made sure to keep us safe. And also one thing about my family as a whole, I think, or just Palestinians as a whole, they always put you first. So we always look after one another no matter what. Family comes first. Whānau come first.
I definitely get that incredible sense from your family. Like, I've met your mum a few times and she seems amazing. And you seem to have a really, really special relationship with your mother.
Yeah.
So Dr. Mai Tamimi, a well-known community leader and actually recipient of the Member of the New Zealand Order of Merit. What were the services for?
You're putting me on the spot right now, but she's mum is incredible.
Yeah.
She's always been a great community leader. Her work through the DCC, her work helping out the refugees in Dunedin from all sorts of background, advisory groups and bits and pieces. So I think that's the least merit, the least award she could have been given. But she also did also receive, she was one of the recipients of the Kiwi Bank, or one of the nominees for the Kiwi Bank.
New Zealander of the Year.
Yes, not last year, the one before. Again, I'm putting myself on the spot, but yes.
she is amazing. And not to mention just busy making chocolates all the time. I mean, she's incredible.
She's a woman of many different talents. She's incredible, and I'm very proud to call her mum.
I was going to ask you what in particular, as a role model, as you as a mother, like from your mother, what is she a good role model for as in terms of being a mother?
Yeah, I guess everything. Resilience, strength, love, care.
Protection.
Protection for sure. I try and get the cooking skills off her too.
Yes.
She's an amazing cook. I thrive to be like her, but I'm still trying. I find it easier when I do the eating rather than the cooking.
I like to clean up. That's my thing. Yeah. I'll happily do the dishes.
Yeah, I like to clean up the plates by eating. Just incredible, strong, resilient.
Amazing. And for you, what does looking like being a role model for your daughter look like for you? Like, what are the important things that you want to role model for her?
Yeah, I guess similar things. You know, showing that life is not just black and white. It's not just, you know, right or left. It's not just
right and wrong.
Right and wrong, that sort of stuff. You just have to go some days day by day and see what life throws at you. But also what I like to really role model for her is our love for our culture, the love for our language, the love for our cultural clothing, the love of our existence and where we come from.
Yeah.
And that identity for her to be in a school attending with mostly, you know, Kiwi students, but her having a dad that's come from Syria, having a mother that's come from Palestine.
Yeah.
Is something, and you know, speaking Arabic at home and speaking English when she wants to, is something very strong and she should forever be proud of.
Absolutely. I'm just going to pop to a word from our sponsor, but I just wanted to pick up on that when we come back.
Yep. Looking to make your next property move in Dunedin? Call the team that lives and breathes property. At NZ Property Solutions, we're 100% locally owned, packed with worldwide property experience, bold ideas, and serious property market know-how. We're passionate, connected, and yes, we love a good laugh too. Ready for a cracking result? Call the team at NZ Property Solutions today and let's get you moving. 0800 22 96 55.
I'm talking today with Renard Tamimi on Tell Me Moya, and we're just talking about how Renard, the things you would like to be to role model for her daughter, and in particular you were talking about the cultural aspects of her background. And I did want to ask you, is she bilingual? So is she?
Yes. No, so since I was pregnant with Leia, I just always made sure that I speak to her in Arabic.
Awesome.
Just literally since she was in my tummy. So Arabic, and then since she was a baby and so on. Because there's nothing like losing your mother language.
Look, and if it can be instilled from that age, exactly. It'll be there forever.
Which is the case at the moment. So it's just very rich and very beautiful.
How old is she?
She turned 6 this year.
Oh, yeah. So yes. Just started at school last year?
She did. Yeah, end of last year.
Did she speak better Arabic than English before she started school, or has that changed?
No, I'm going to say a mix of both. Yeah, a mix of both. She does tend to know who to speak Arabic to and who to speak English to, which is nice. But at home, I try and just keep it Arabic because at school it's all English and with her friends it's all English. So,
getting that balance.
If you don't practice it, then you lose it.
So. And I suppose it's really great for you.
Perfect. And when I went home last year, I made sure I bought some resources back to teach her the writing
amazing.
And
the grammar. And
exactly.
That's fantastic. So I love you've been talking about parenting in terms of role modeling, and you talked about the teaching her that life isn't black and white and right or wrong, not always straightforward. And I love that. I love that idea about. Parenting is teaching our kids about the hard stuff too, and about resilience, and about how to pick themselves up and shake themselves off. But yours is like on another scale in terms of what's going on in your lives. And as a 6-year-old, how much does she understand about the reality of what's happening in Palestine? Is that something, a conversation that you have that's full and frank, or is it tempered? Or
we it does come up in conversations for sure. Since we've been attending rallies and organizing events and stuff, she's just been loving every moment of it. Just being there, supporting, wearing her Palestine outfits and flag, and it's amazing how much a 6 or 5 year old can understand at this age.
Yes.
We talk about it, I guess, in brief senses of, children dying and being killed and this and that.
Yeah.
But I guess, she's not at that age to understand a lot more than that.
Yes.
But also boycotting is a big part that I've drawn her into, which she understands.
Yeah.
Where, we can't buy this, we can't buy that because they support Israel and Israel doesn't support Palestine. And try and keep it simple, but she does get the idea of it.
Actually, the boycotting is a great, it's just such a great way for your average everyday person to do something that's meaningful, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
It's not hard.
No.
It's not hard. It's just you just have to be a bit discerning.
Yeah.
Can you I don't want to put you on the spot again. This should be my research, but can you remind me where you can find that list? It's like a really comprehensive list of things. We'll have a think about it and then maybe,
There's a BDS, like a national BDS website.
Yep, okay.
If you just Google BDS New Zealand.
Yep.
But there's the app. There's an app called No Thank You.
Oh, great.
And there's another one, I think, something cat involved. So,
No Thank You. I'm going to, No Thank You. And, and what did you say, cat?
Boy cat. But I mean, App Store or Google Store should help you with that.
Yeah, okay.
Finding that,
Because as your everyday Kiwi or whatever, whoever, we can march and we can donate money and we can write to our government. I found a really good. There was a WhatsApp group that were sending daily scripts that you could email to the government.
Oh, yes.
And things, all of that stuff. You can do all of that. But it is really hard to know what else to do and how else we can show our support.
Yeah.
And then you get people who say, oh, what does the, you're not doing anything, doesn't do anything.
Doesn't
affect
us.
The marches don't achieve anything.
Yep.
This doesn't affect us. How do you respond to those kind of remarks?
Yeah, well, I guess now it is affecting us where the petrol prices are going up and people are having to worry about fuel. And obviously I'm one of those people too, but I'm not saying it doesn't affect me as well. But what touched me actually last week, we went to took my daughter to the swimming pool, and for the first time I could hear people in public talk about this war that's going on. And they were just talking about it and just sounding, I'm not saying they're not educated, but just so sounding so educated and invested into the topic. And I was just thinking, where were you guys maybe 3-4 years ago, 80 plus years ago, when, you know, like,
oh, why it's because do it's you affecting
care? Exactly, them. Because now they're having to pay extra money for petrol. They're having to, it's affecting them, which is just so sad, because we've been, for 3 years plus now, we've been crying, pleading to people,
begging,
this
like,
is happening. Yeah. Watch this video, see that, I mean, we don't need to ask them to watch anything because it's all over the news, it's all over social media.
Yep.
But yeah, my response would be, well, where are you?
Where have you been?
No, where have you been? Exactly.
Yeah, that must be incredibly, just so frustrating and hurtful. And I wonder how you balance, like, all your feelings of, like, you know, being really, having to be really active and initiate all this activism with the kind of frustration of, like, come on, guys, like, what keeps you going? It must feel like it falls on deaf ears at times.
Yeah, it's really hard. I think, as I touched on this a little bit earlier, what keeps us going is the people that care. What keeps us going are the people that show up and actually show support and actually show that they care. And the tide is turning, which we can see.
Yeah.
Maybe not as quickly as we have hoped. And unfortunately, that's cost so many human lives. But, yeah, it is hard to keep that balance. It's also hard to keep it when you just have to put a face on every morning, turn up to work, deal with customers or deal with your everyday life where in your background, you know, your home country is burning apart and, like, I don't care about your bill. I don't care about your modem. This is what I deal with at work.
Of course.
You know, as much as I love my job and stuff, but you turn up and you're like, no. I actually have a different life in my background, you know?
Yeah. I know what it's like to struggle to focus at work when I'm, you know, I know the cat's left a mouse on the front doorstep. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't even know how you have been able to hold those two things for such a long time. And to that end, like, can I ask, because we're having frank conversations, is there like a, do you have that sense of survivor guilt?
Yeah.
Or, you know, so just to go back, what, I know your mum got a PhD scholarship in New Zealand. And so why, like, were they always keen on New Zealand? Was that just that this just turned up and they decided, oh, what the heck, let's go? Or were they always planning to leave? Or
I think it was quite random. I think mum was just looking at scholarships online. I think the other option was England or the UK at the time.
Yeah.
And something fell apart with that one, didn't quite work out. And then she got this offer in New Zealand.
Yeah.
We knew nothing about New Zealand. We didn't even know that it existed as a country. Nothing. And then, it was just a decision to bring the family and come across.
Yeah, okay.
So
back to the survivor guilt thing.
Yes. So,
what does that look like?
Oh, yeah, no. I think since day one I've just always felt that. And 3 years ago would be the most I've ever felt it. And yes, people say, you know, yes, but you can be the voice for your people. You know, you're doing so much already. Don't feel bad. But no, I cannot not feel bad. When you wake up in the morning in a safe place, you don't have to worry about living in a tent. You don't have to worry about your washing, your eating, dropping your kids off to school, hygiene, or like even the simplest things, like, will I make it to the next hour?
Oh, look, it's totally incomprehensible.
Yeah.
Really, it is. And I guess in a different relative scale, then the people who are caring, you know, it's like a scale of, we also sort of have a similar feeling, I guess, of like, well, we should be having that feeling of like, look how lucky we are that we get to wake up every day, safe, can send our kids. Just the things that we take for granted here are just mind-blowing, really. Do you think there are misconceptions about Palestine in the world or Palestinian people? Like, if there were, what would they be and what would you say to them?
Yeah, I guess some misconceptions or misassumptions would be that, let's say, all Palestinians are Muslim, or all Palestinians are Jews,
or Hamas,
or Fatah, or pro this, pro that. No, Palestinians are, we've got all religions in Palestine. You've got Jews, you've got Muslims, you've got Christians. Palestine has always been the land of peace, the land of prayer, the land that would welcome anyone on its doorsteps. But also, I think, lost my train of thoughts here.
Oh, the question was about misconceptions.
Yes. So I think, a lot of people, they would think, as you said, Palestinians are all terrorists.
Yeah.
Or Hamas, or baby killers, or beheaded babies. And there's just so much out there. But Palestinians are just people. They are literally humans, just like you and me.
Yeah.
They want to get along. They want to get
live their life
day by day, you know, make a living, go to their daughter's graduation at school, drop their daughter off to her first day of school. Like, just...
Yeah. Just live.
Yeah, simplest pleasures. So, there are so many misconceptions out there, and I think time more than ever before, and it's, again, that propaganda and how much is getting paid into that.
For sure, the propaganda is outrageous, but I also think that, it's a really weird thing to say, but if you had to take one thing away from this whole thing, I think that this time around it is really because of the accessibility, just witnessing what's happening and social media and the way it's all in our faces and in our screens and in our lives. Mm. The education, do you think that's been one good thing to come out of it, is that the awareness now and the I also think that the way I see Palestinians as being portrayed is of these genuinely remarkable, loving, peaceful, beautiful, beautiful people. That's kind of what's come across to me.
Yeah, we actually went to a film screening yesterday, The Doctor's Wife, which I recommend everyone to watch.
Sure.
And again, it touches on, it just shows you they are normal, beautiful, loving people getting on day by day, but what is restricting them from doing that is the occupation.
Yeah.
But actually going back to the very start of this conversation today, I think you're right. The awareness is one big positive thing. Awareness, education, and the number of people that now know about Palestine and Palestinians is incredible compared to what it used to be like before this genocide.
Yeah.
So that's literally the one thing I can look at from a positive note, which is a big thing.
Yeah.
Because I would never have thought a day would come and so many people would, you know, I used to say to people, oh, yes, I come from Palestine. It would be like, oh, Pakistan. No, Palestine.
Yeah,
right. Oh, Israel. No, Palestine. And it's just amazing how that conversation has changed now and how, those interactions,
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned a film yesterday, but there was a film last year, I think it was last year, about, correct me if I'm wrong, about the olive trees?
Yes, I think it's called The Olive Tree.
And I didn't see it, but essentially, you know, the olive tree and the olive branch has always been this symbol of peace and everything, and olive trees are very much a part of the Palestinian landscape and culture and food and everything. And I think you shared a memory somewhere about picking olives with your grandma. Yes. Is that correct? Tell us about that.
So we used to pick up olives with my grandma, with my grandparents, whether it was at my dad's parents or my mum's parents' place, which was just so beautiful. And olives have just always been a thing in Palestine. But I'll tell you a secret. I actually don't like olives. Probably the first time I'm saying this out loud in public.
Maybe the only Palestinian.
Probably, yes. I do like olive oil. I like za'atar. I like everything that we produce, but I just happen to not eat
like olives
or like them. But when I went home just this last year, I managed to take some photos of grandma's olive tree. in her backyard, and that did need to be picked up picked. But unfortunately, Granddad has been in hospital and been on a stroke for maybe 5-6 months now. So it's just, so that was a bit bittersweet. But
so the olive tree for them wasn't like an olive orchard. It wasn't their livelihood. It was just what they
had. It's just what they have. A lot of people, they have that as as a form of income and source of income.
But acres and acres, thousands of acres of olive trees have been destroyed. Of course,
And there's that popular image of that lady holding onto their olive tree, which I'm sure you've seen online. So, it's just a form of, I'm hanging onto my land.
My hope and my hope.
Onto my identity. You can't take away that from me. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, my goodness. And so, you went home last year.
Yes.
So that must have been incredibly complex. Logistically challenging? Was it just a question of, you can just go and that's fine? Or did you have to jump through numerous hoops to be able to go? What was the story?
Yeah, so going home is never easy. Last time I went was 9 years ago. And this time, I guess the decision was encouraged. Well, not encouraged in a sense of encouragement, but Granddad had a stroke, Mum's dad. And so she left it. Mid-November, and we thought, okay, if she gets let in and that's all fine, obviously, we weren't trialing on her, but, she had to go. She literally booked her tickets overnight.
Yeah, and she just needed to be there. Yeah.
She needed to be with her dad and whānau. But when we made sure that she got in fine or safer than we thought, then myself, my sister and dad decided to book tickets and follow through to support Mum, Granddad, the rest of the family. And if it wasn't for this, we were thinking of going this year in April.
Okay.
Now thinking about it, if we thought about going now, there's no way because it's just everywhere is burning at the moment. There's no flights, there's nothing.
So in a way, it's very lucky that you went when you did.
Yes, so I guess as they say, everything happens for a reason. There's good timing for everything. And sometimes when you have a billion reasons that say to you, no, 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 and you stick with what your heart wants, that's what we did. And yes, it was complex, and yes, it is still complex. And taking so many flights and getting into Jordan and then crossing the border from Jordan to the Israeli border, to the Palestinian border, to your hometown, that on its own is a whole nother story.
And days and days of travel?
Yes, days and days of travel. I think we left New Zealand on a Tuesday and we got to Palestine Saturday, Sunday, from memory. So it is a very long way. And you're talking to someone who hates turbulence. I hate flights.
I do
not like flights at all. I get so much anxiety on flights. But having the family with me was quite obviously good to give you that support. But also I think the other reason why I was so worried was because, you'd always have in the back of your mind that question, am I actually going to be let in?
Yeah.
Into Palestine.
And what about if I'm in, am I going to be allowed to leave?
And that too.
Right.
Exactly. Okay.
Because leaving your daughter here.
And just thinking, the border.
And anything could happen.
Or the border could shut tomorrow and then it could be shut for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. You don't know.
You don't know.
That uncertainty is just
phenomenal.
Yeah.
We're just going to have another word from our sponsors.
Looking to make your next property move in Dunedin? Call the team that lives and breathes property. At NZ Property Solutions, we're 100% locally owned, packed with worldwide property experience, bold ideas, and serious property market know-how. We're passionate, connected, and yes, we love a good laugh too. Ready for a cracking result? Call the team at NZ Property Solutions today and let's get you moving. 0800 229655.
So grateful to New Zealand Property Solutions for sponsoring this first season of Tell Me Moya. And I've got Rena Tamimi in the studio. We've just been talking about her trip back home to Palestine last year, which was actually well-timed in the current light of things. So we're very glad that you made it back.
Thank you. Yeah. I am too.
And is your mum still there?
No, she's just come back too recently, about 3-4 weeks ago, which was a miracle because of the no-flight situation and the Middle East literally being on fire. She had to take a whole different route to get to here. She had to go from Palestine to Jordan, Jordan, South Africa, from South Africa to Perth, from Perth to Auckland, Auckland, Dunedin. So you can just imagine what went on behind the scenes for that.
But we're happy to have her home. For sure, and hate to think about the cost.
Yeah.
Just absolutely revolting. Yeah. Look, I just want to double back briefly, just to talk about the activism for a moment, and then I want to talk about the Watermelon Report, which is your own podcast and radio show. So I'm interested. I'd be really curious to hear what you think the strengths are that women can bring to like these big movements for justice and liberation. Like, what do you think it is that women have in particular that's meaningful?
Yeah, I guess confidence, strength, believing in yourself, believing in where you come from, believing in the cause you are fighting for, believing that, yes, you can make a difference. Even if it's just you out there yelling in the streets or, you know, speaking your heart out or speaking how you feel or talking about something that you're passionate about. I think strength, resilience, motivation.
I think that it's like the thing that I sense from you at those marches as well is like there's, yes, all of those things, but there's also this softness and this real humanness and this real like the motherhood and all of that stuff that goes. I mean, I think we should be living in a matriarchal society. Everything would just be so much better if it was. I don't know how you feel about that, but that's certainly how I feel. And actually, I have been asking all of my guests if they think that women can have it all, but I actually just didn't really want to ask you that question because I feel like it's such an entitled question when you've got women who are basically fighting for their lives or the lives of their families. This idea, can women have it all, is just actually really indulgent and bougie. Would that be your feeling about it?
Oh, I would say the same, yeah. And I think, like, you know, I am lucky and grateful of what I have right now, but also, we see it every day, women fighting for their last breath and, you know, not having period products and not being able
to. No dignity, no choice.
No dignity, no choice. Not being able to even give birth in a clean, nice environment. So,
That question is very redundant.
Yep.
Yeah. So you also have a podcast and a radio show called The Watermelon, an award-winning. Is that right? Did it win?
It won. I won something. I can't remember the exact title of it.
Like favorite?
People's
Choice, something like that.
So the People's Choice Award was something at university or back at uni, back at high school.
Oh, amazing.
But the Watermelon Report, no, that's I did win an award last year, though, during the awards night that we had at ORFM.
For the Watermelon
Report. But I can't remember the exact title of the award. But, yes, Watermelon Report.
And so you can access that through ORFM, of course. And basically, is it just you or is it interviews and you?
So far, it's just me,
me
and my voice and the passion that I have for my people and Palestine. I just try and bring Palestine to New Zealand, really, and talk about our culture, our people, as well as bring weekly updates of what's happening.
And I've read somewhere that you have expressed a desire for that to ultimately become more like a cultural podcast.
Yes,
and
not
so one day, hopefully.
Yep. Definitely, when I don't have, I guess, news to talk about, I try and still tie that into my weekly shows anyway, like a cultural aspect of some sort or like a food recipe or something different other than, because I guess my whole idea is that Palestine is not just ethnic cleansing, it's not just a genocide, it's got beauty to it too, which I like to showcase.
Totally. And I think this is the probably the theme of today is this the brutality, but the beauty as well, isn't it? Yeah, of all of the things, of what's happening in Palestine, of motherhood, of activism, of all of those things, because the beauty in the activism is the coming together, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, what's that saying? Like, in a crisis, you look for the helpers.
Yes.
And I think, just to go right back to what you said at the start of the interview, that it was sort of, it's the people that come and join in that give you the hope and the motivation to keep
and
going
the
strength to keep going. And so, like, what would your advice be, you know, for people to, in terms of taking action? Is it just doing what you can where you are? Like we should be, it's very overwhelming to look out and look at the world at the moment and just think, oh my God, like, it's all going up in flames, and what can I do?
Yeah.
And very easy to just put your head in the sand and just be like, well, I'll do nothing. But actually, just, it's that really imperfect action, I think, is really important. But also just what you can do in your community, isn't it? Just all the little things.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't have to be big. Plan at your own capacity, plan at what you can do. Look after yourself, look after your neighbours.
Talk about
see,
it.
Talk That's about a big it, at thing, least eh? Educate people about it. Boycott, donate, support.
But we've got more rallies planned?
Yes, we're hoping to have one coming up in April that's actually being getting cooked at the moment.
Because I noticed you asked for feedback from the community, and lots of people said rally.
Yeah, we were quiet for a while, but yes, we, and you saw on that post the passion.
It's so interesting, isn't it? People are like, no, we want to, because then you really tangibly feel like you're doing something, and that's so indulgent and such a, you know, like, really, but helping us with our egos, I guess, to feel like we're doing something. But at least you are out there and you can use your voice and shout and stomp, and there's a real physical kind of meaningfulness to it, isn't there?
Yeah, it's just like, I guess, burning that energy off with action.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's why we asked for feedback, because we were quiet for a while. Obviously, we went back home, etc. So it was nice. It's always nice to hear what people think of actions and future rallies and events, and what else we could bring to Dunedin.
Yeah.
Because even if it wasn't about the genocide or the war, we still, again, want to showcase our culture and people.
Yes.
So we will continue on taking action where we can.
Amazing. And so that would lead me to believe that it is very much you and your family who are instigating these. If you've been away and it's all been quiet, it, like, relies quite heavily.
Yeah, no, we do. Yes, I mean, in a way, but we do have a big group of people who are amazing at, you know, organising
it. Yes, the Justice for Palestine group,
But I guess, just having us being away, and then actually Ramadan was after that, the month of fasting, which, again, had most of us quite quiet because, you know, you're fasting all day, not enough energy to do much. And I guess just a month of reflection and looking back at what we've done. And also, I think the other thing, the other reason why we've been quiet is because we don't know what messages we should be delivering. You know, we don't know what's happening. We actually don't know what's happening at the moment.
It has gone very quiet. It's just, not you guys, but like in general.
In general, it's just, I guess with this war being every day escalating. It's like one day you're fighting for this country and then the other day you have to fight for another country.
Yeah.
So I guess it was just to take deep breaths and actually refocus and reshift and see what we can do as a group again.
Yeah, because there is that danger, of course. It feels like to me that all these other things, as valid as they are also distractions. You know, like, it's easy, as you say, for a new thing to become the priority in the social media feed, and it's easy to forget that this is just so relentlessly ongoing for the Palestinian people. So my last question to you is, do you feel hopeful? Do you have hope? Do you feel hopeful for the future in general, in terms of Palestine? Like, is this?
Yes, as hard as it might be to believe, yes, I do have hope, definitely. I think us as Palestinians, we would never lose hope. And we would always keep the keys to return back home. And we are like the seeds in the watermelon, as I always say, just everywhere, scattered everywhere. And now we've got more Palestinians scattered everywhere.
Yes.
They might not be Palestinians by nationality, but they believe in us and they believe in a free Palestine.
I totally agree. Thank you so much for coming in today and chatting with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Because I know you've got a busy schedule. And I feel like we could talk for a very long time.
We really could. Yeah. I'd love to have another chat some other time for sure.
We definitely will. So you've been listening to Harriet Moyer in conversation with Rena Tamimi in the first season of Tell Me Moyer. And for more information about the Dunedin Justice for Palestine group, you can find them online.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, just in terms of referencing those that boycotting app, there was one called No Thank You.
So and one called
Boycat.
Yeah. But they can easily be Googled and found out. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So boycotting at the very least. And we look forward to news about the upcoming March in April that those of us in Dunedin can be a part of. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much for having me. Yes.
We will see you next time.
Yep.
You've been listening to Tell Me Moyer, where the conversations with women are brave, bold, and occasionally make you clutch your pearls in a good way. Heard something that made you gasp, giggle, or immediately text your group chat? Don't worry, we've got you. You can replay this episode or dive into more colourful conversations at oar.org.nz or find us on your favourite podcast platform. For more information about my shows and shenanigans, follow me on Instagram and Facebook, Harriet Moyer, Entertainer MC. Thanks so much to Denise Casey and the legends at New Zealand Property Solutions for their tremendous support. Now, go on, hit subscribe. You know you want to.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.